Glad to have you all with us for the first Political Rewind of the week. So intransparent, got to be transparent here. You know, our effort on every show is to balance our panel, to have a Republican and a Democrat, or a conservative and someone who's a bit more liberal. And we've managed that for more than 5 years now. I don't want to call out an individual by name, but I will tell you that as of the time we go on the air, we don't have our Democratic woman here yet. Now, I'm hopeful she will show up.
She will be here, and she will catch up.
Yeah, that's Jim Galloway. He is here, as he always is, on Mondays and Fridays. He, of course, is the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him on Wednesdays and Sundays in the paper, and he oversees the Political Insider blog. So, Jim, you're sitting across from Mark Rountree, who we know pretty well and have for quite a long time. He is the president and the founder of Landmark Communications, political consulting firm that works with Republican candidates primarily. Do you represent any? Have you represented Democrats in your career, or do you pretty much stick to the Republican Party?
We're a Republican firm at Landmark Communications. There are instances where we may have worked in a Democratic primary against another Democrat, but we have never run a Democrat campaign against a Republican in 30 years.
Gotcha. Because God forbid, what would happen if you did?
Well, I mean, and the Democrats a lot of times do not like their political consulting groups, and so they seek alternatives, but we don't run races against Republicans.
Do I remember you being active in Henry County in some fashion a while back?
Oh, yes. We've done a lot of work in Henry County, actually. State Representative Welch down there. We've done the county chairmanships and county commission races a lot.
Mark is also one of the most highly respected pollsters without regard to party affiliation in Georgia. And again, without regard to the fact that you are a Republican consultant, you have polled for Channel 2 News and other media organizations. So a little later in the show, we're going to talk about the impeachment polls, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this. Okay?
I do, too.
All right. So let's start. Like, as I said, we're sort of operating with one arm behind our back today. So, Mark, you're going to have to represent both the Republican. First, you can talk as the conservative you that you are. Then I'm going to ask you to pretend you're a liberal and, you know, give the liberal argument of the same issue, okay?
I do my best.
all of this without any graduation from the state bar.
Yeah, that's right. So, Jim Galloway, let's start with an interesting local issue that popped up over the weekend. I actually read it in the Political Insider blog. Up in Pickens County, the school superintendent there, Carlton Wilson, made a decision that was announced recently about transgender students. He said that that transgender students, and there are apparently several of them in Pickens County, would be able to use the bathroom of their choice. He apparently based his decision on a federal court ruling in Florida, which said, you know, the law should the law says transgender students should be able to use the bathroom of choice. And of course, what a surprise, it's kicked up quite a controversy. There's a big town meeting up there at Pickens High School tonight, and there are apparently, according to the AJC, some pretty angry parents.
Yeah, and these kind of situations put the school district in a really difficult situation. Because you may have parents talking about student A or student B or student Z, and of course, you know, school districts cannot. They are very, very tightly restricted as to what they can say about individual students by federal and state privacy laws.
Mark, we should point out that when a few years back, President Obama issued not an executive order, but what they called a guidance from the Department of Education, which said the same thing, essentially, that schools, public schools, should establish policies that would mandate that transgender students use the bathroom of the gender with which they identify. And Georgia was one of the states, Sam Olens at the time was attorney general, that sued the federal government, saying that this is another example of federal intrusion into state or local affairs.
Yes, they did. And then shortly after President Trump was elected, President Trump rescinded those guidelines, allowing states to decide for themselves. And I guess they could anyway, but the guidelines were removed.
So what are the issues here? There, parents who are opposed to this have said up in Pickens and in other places where this has occurred that that they believe there's a safety issue here. Now, I don't know if you've spent time thinking about this issue in any depth, but what I mean, I'm trying to understand whether this is cultural warfare, or something much more grounded and realistic than that.
Maybe a little of both.
Yeah.
You know, you also have, politically speaking, you have Republicans who have some difficult time because some of them are going to take the approach of this is a state choice.
Mm-hmm.
Some don't want it to be a state choice. They don't want states to design. And then others at the state level, it could be a county level issue, local control. And civil libertarians may split off from conservatives and liberals on this. So it is one of those that cuts different directions.
We had something like this going on in 2016 over in Fannin County, and to me, it's interesting that so you've got a situation. We've got two instances over a couple of years, and both are in North Georgia. And mm-hmm. and there's something interesting happening here. Is that you've got North Georgia traditionally is a very very conservative mm-hmm. place. Whether it was even right. when it was Democrat or Republican didn't matter. All right, but you've got this over the last 2-3 decades. You've got this growing tourist element going up in North Georgia in the mountains areas, a thriving tourism economy going. And so you've got and with that has come an influx of many people from Metro Atlanta, including a large LGBT population in Fannin County. It's a statistic that I came through here from Georgia Equality that after Fulton County and DeKalb County and maybe one other county, the highest per capita population of gays in Georgia is in Fannin and Towns County up there. So you've got this mixture of cultures that are happening, and I think that's part of what's driving this.
Well, okay, it's interesting you said that because as soon as you did, Jim, I went to my magic Google machine to look at 2016 election results. And in Fannin County, which, as you point out, is really been a conservative area, Donald Trump won 82% of the vote. So, you know, people who are that conservative, I would guess it's not unfair to suggest they probably would be opposed to this ruling, the
sure.
ruling they had
sure.
in Fannin.
Mm-hmm.
And in Pickens, he won 83% of the vote. So your point is well taken. These are very conservative places.
And but their economies are changing.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So on the cultural war front, Mark, is this an issue that Republicans can embrace and run with in that county, in elections coming up, in the next elections up that way for county commission or whatever? It, as a political consultant, is this the kind of issue you think your candidates, if you had them in an area like that, would want to be involved with, or do you avoid them?
Realistically, Republicans are going to win if you're referring to kind of a Democrat versus Republican
Doesn't
thing. Republicans are going to win regardless of the position they take in
gotcha.
Fannin and in
All right,
Pickens.
If you have a candidate who might face a challenge from the right— you have to jump in on an issue like this?
You mean in a Republican
yeah,
primary?
Yeah, of course, in a Republican primary.
I mean, it's not clear that any candidate up there has taken this. This was a move by the school superintendent,
not an
elected
official. No, I
understand
that, but I'm asking how it plays as an election issue is what I'm asking now.
Within a Republican
yeah,
primary?
Exactly.
Of course, there are going to be people that oppose the idea of self-selection of which restroom you go to. I think there are a lot of parents, particularly of girls, that are concerned about that. And so I think that is definitely an issue. And I don't think it's just going to be relegated to Republican primaries. I think probably in a general election it could be an issue as well.
Yeah. It's interesting that in the that a school superintendent in one of the counties that was involved in this said that if they allowed this to happen, teenage boys would, quote, storm into the girls' bathroom if given the choice because of this.
I gotta tell you, 45 years ago that happened, and we didn't have the transgender situation.
I don't mean to laugh at it, but it's just, Jim, it isn't funny, but it just strikes me that these are the kinds of culture wars. Look what happened in North Carolina as a result of this. I can't help but wonder if this is, look over here, because if you look over here, you won't see the big stuff that's happening in front of you.
It's one of these, I mean, well, first of all, I would say there is nothing more intimate in politics than your local school.
Yeah.
And in that situation, you tend to invest a whole lot of attention in that. And of course, religion is a big factor.
Yeah.
I think you would see that church attendance in North Georgia is far higher there than almost anywhere else in the U.S.
Okay, fair enough. We will watch how this plays out in Pickens County. I just thought it was an interesting issue because I kind of thought after what we saw happen in North Carolina with the NCAA, corporations pulling away from the state.
The difference there was that it was the North Carolina General Assembly.
It was a
getting,
state.
It was the Capitol getting
gotcha,
involved in that.
Gotcha. Okay, that's fair enough. Jim, while we're talking about a state issue, and before we do turn to impeachment, which always sends us down a rabbit hole from which we cannot escape, I saw another article that I thought was interesting in the AJC in the Insider this week, and that is that there appears to be a number of people in the Capitol, including Harold Jones, I believe, Senator Harold Jones, are looking at the fact that we now have something like 12 municipalities across Georgia that have decriminalized possession of an ounce or less of marijuana. And I think those areas cover something like 1.2 million Georgians.
Yeah, about 11% of the population.
So Harold Jones, among others, they're saying this kind of patchwork, hodgepodge, Chambly's decriminalized, Marietta's not, just doesn't work. We ought to address this as a legislature.
And what's interesting is, as soon as that article was posted, there was a Twitter message that came out of the speaker's office from Caleb McMichen, his spokesman, and it said, in a word, no.
No. No.
And this goes back to the medicinal marijuana debate.
Yeah.
that's been in the Capitol for the last 4 years. And part of the bargain of passage of medicinal marijuana has been that the rest of the wall on marijuana enforcement would hold. And I think that's so you've got a House Speaker right now who is not interested in breaching that.
Yeah, Mark, that's exactly what I thought of when I saw that. This is the kind of slippery slope that some lawmakers back in the midst of the medical marijuana debate envisioned, that it would, slowly what we would do is move toward decriminalization or legalization of recreational marijuana.
Right.
And so it's no wonder that the speaker so quickly put the brakes on this thing.
Well, and you do have in Clarkston, Georgia, the mayor over there had endorsed, and they sort of passed one of these
The mayor and U.S. Senate candidate.
And now, that's where I was going with it,
is
he is going to be running with this as an issue, and it may be, in my industry, we call it Bubba food. It's not going anywhere, and he's just going to be placating people with sort of an argument or a narrative that he's going to do something about legalization of marijuana, but in reality, he won't. But they can use it for political purposes.
But I'll tell you, look, attitudes are changing. They are in flux. And this is something that, the wall may hold for a number of years yet, but eventually I think there's going to be a breach. What's interesting, I think, that Alan Peake, the state representative who was behind, out of Macon, who was behind the medicinal marijuana push. While he was in office, of course, he was steadfast against any change in state attitudes toward recreational marijuana. he is now rethinking. The AJC article you talked about
yep.
has him rethinking that now.
Yeah.
And look, you've got, I think, generally speaking, experts are saying that, you know, that marijuana use is equal among all kind of demographics of young people. But they're also finding out that 64% of the arrests are of African Americans.
Yeah.
That's doubled their population
yeah.
in Georgia.
Yeah, so there is a social justice issue here, Mark, if that's the case. If blacks and whites are using marijuana equally, but it's African Americans who are arrested and thrown in jail, there is that component of it to take into consideration too, isn't there?
I think that'll be part of the debate. I don't know what more to say to that.
All right. Let's look at another issue that we have bubbling up in the... Well, I don't know if it's an issue. Let me say it's a curiosity. Let me start with that, Jim. Barry Loudermilk, 11th District Republican congressman, been in office 5 years, something like that, 6 years, longer than that.
Oh, I think longer than that.
Longer?
No. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I have to look him up.
The point is, he's entrenched, I think it's safe to say, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, it is.
But here's what, it's interesting that he has now drawn a Democrat who wants to oppose him in that race, Dana Barrett. She's a former WGST talk show host. She calls herself a social liberal and a fiscally responsible moderate. Loudermilk won that seat in 2016 with 61% of the vote. Trump won the district by 25% that same year. So, Jim, just interesting that she's jumped into what is a tough, tough race.
And Mark, you probably have the better figure on the numbers here. But in 2018, you know, that race was a little bit closer than 61%.
Yep.
And I believe the Democrat carried Cobb County, which is a large portion of that. I mean, Loudermilk was saved by Bartow County, and I think Cherokee is where he goes.
There's a part of Fulton in there, actually.
Yeah, that's true. Right. So I think, and look, the Democrats are making a big push in Cobb County right now. So do I think Loudermilk's in trouble? No, but I think she could make a pretty good showing.
Mark?
She will not win that district in a governor year or a presidential year. That district is just going to be too Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But Democrats will try to run someone in every district. I think that's going to be part of the strategy for them in 2020 mm-hmm. anyway.
So, Jim Galloway, you once again have pushed me to go to the magic Google machine where it tells me that in 2018, Loudermilk did win 62% of the vote
okay.
against a relatively Flynn Broady mm-hmm. Jr., the Democrat in that race, who won 38% of it.
But I think he still won Cobb.
Okay, well,
Trump carried the district by 25.
I should have looked at that.
Trump carried the district by 25, and mm-hmm. so if Trump is winning the district, down ticket, Republicans are going to generally even do better than that.
That's right. I think what it does is it's going to generate some interesting numbers to be used during redistricting. Because Republicans are going to have to try to figure out how they can draw their lines to better defend themselves over the years ahead.
All right.
What's going to affect that is going to be the McBath race, realistically, and Congressional District 7, the Woodall district.
Mm-hmm.
Those are going to be the districts that you draw around. If you elect two Democrats were to win those two districts, I wouldn't be surprised to see them running against each other 2 years later. And that would free up some Republican areas.
Okay, let's jump around. Let's play, you know, you say a name, we talk about it. Lucy McBath. You had an interesting piece today about the fact that Lucy McBath, who everybody thinks could be very, very vulnerable to a strong Republican challenge, she is not high on the list of a group that is going to put money into about half a dozen races or so.
Yeah, this was a kind of a campaign announced by a group called American First Policies.
Yeah.
It's a PAC that's associated with Donald Trump. I'm not sure. I'm sure they tried to keep themselves at arm's length of it, but they announced $1 million campaign to go after the 28 swing members of Congress, Democratic swing members, who might be vulnerable on the impeachment issue. And you know, they're doing the Facebook thing. They're doing the text messaging thing. The TV compartment, which to me is kind of the high priority. Your best targets are. You put your best targets on. The districts they're choosing are the Iowa 1, mm-hmm. Virginia 7, and Pennsylvania 8. McBath's 6th district is not on there.
Interesting.
And if you look at it, I started comparing some census data and looking at the two new fissures that are jumping up in politics now is on education. Trump is really kind of you see college educated drifting more toward Democrats. You see non-college educated leaning hard toward Trump. And Republicans and age. There's a kind of a cliff somewhere around the age of 50 to 54. Mm-hmm. The younger you are, the more you list Democrat. In each one of those cases, I think the 6th district is younger, and it's far more has far more college educated members in it. So I think that's a signal that it might be a little bit harder to crack than Republicans.
The reason
think.
They don't take on a lot of the special interests don't take on Metro Atlanta districts is the sheer expense of mm-hmm. running in Metro Atlanta. A $200,000 expense in Iowa is massive. In mm-hmm. Atlanta, yeah. It's a few mail pieces.
Changes, yeah.
It's mm-hmm. nothing in Metro Atlanta, and you can't even get up on television for $200,000 with any appreciable buy. So that's the reason a lot of the special interests stay out of Metro Atlanta, other than to do direct advertising like Facebook and the rest. But even Facebook advertising is more expensive in Metro Atlanta than it is in Iowa or Pennsylvania, just because of the amount of inventory that's available.
All right, let's do this. Let's get a break, our first break of the show, out of the way. And when we come back, we've got a few more things we can clean up in state politics, but I'm really looking forward, Mark Rountree, to talking about the polling that we've seen on impeachment and getting your take on where you see these polls heading. And we'll take up that and a lot more on Political Rewind after this.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV? GPB's vehicle donation program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227. And thanks so much.
President Trump got elected on a promise to repeal Obamacare. Those efforts failed, so he changed tactics, getting rid of the law piecemeal.
The individual mandate is gone, the most unpopular part of Obamacare, and we almost have Obamacare gone. We're close.
How the administration has changed the law and the impact it's had. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on GPB and gpbnews.org.
We're back on Political Rewind. Mark Rountree is with us. So is Jim Galloway. I mentioned at the top of the show, and I'll repeat it again at least one more time. Our Democratic woman is not with us today. There appears to have been a scheduling issue that we weren't aware of. And that's fine. We'll get along just fine. We're operating, as I said, without our usual balance, with one arm tied behind our back. But Mark Rountree's an equitable guy, Jim. He's not gonna go off on a partisan rant.
No.
Because he'd like to come back to the show sometime.
In the last half hour, he's supposed to take the Democratic side.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly right. He'll switch seats. Mark, and Jim, of course. Let's talk a little bit about where we see the impeachment polls heading right now. The one that everybody is paying a lot of attention to, of course, is a Fox News poll that looked at voters between October 6th and October 8th, so well into the impeachment investigation window. And they found that 51% of their universe supports impeachment and removal of Donald Trump from office. That's up from 42% in July. 4% said that Trump should be impeached but not removed. 40% said he should not be impeached. That is down from the July numbers where they had 45% who say that he should not be impeached. What's interesting about this, I think, Mark, is that the president's job performance in this Fox poll, well, a couple things. One, smaller numbers of Republicans, of course, are weighing in on, yes, he should be impeached and removed or investigated. But to continue what I said, his job performance numbers haven't moved much. In September, he had 45% approval in the Fox poll. He's got 43 today. That's almost a statistical anomaly, I would imagine, isn't it, Mark? And his disapproval numbers, 54% in September, 55% now.
The numbers aren't that different. And the reason they're not that different is that poll was a mistake. The poll was actually conducted by Braun Research, the poll you're referring to, the Fox News poll. Mm-hmm. They had the weighting of Democrats at 48% of the poll when it really should have been in the upper 30s. So they overweighted Democrats. I don't think it was anything nefarious. I think it's one of those things that sometimes pollsters in a rush inadvertently move through numbers without really stepping back and doing quality control. But that number was off. And so, yes, it was newsworthy because it was Fox. Trump attacked them for the poll, in fact, by name. But I think realistically, there was a lot of criticism for the weighting of that poll.
How about the weighting of independents?
Let's see. I can pull it up right here.
The independents didn't move that.
I don't see it.
And that was the most important part.
Didn't move that much. I think there's like 3% bump up.
Democrats went up a little bit. Independents went up a couple of points.
Yeah,
Republicans were about the same. But yet they had a big spike in the number of overall people because they overweighted the Democrats. So within the Democrats, it had moved up just a little bit. And this was you got to remember, this was also in the moment where Nancy Pelosi, broke into primetime news saying they were going to support impeachment. So there was a few points realistically of real rise probably for impeachment. It was not 51%. And really nobody else is finding those numbers.
Well, now, okay, first of all, I want to ask you, you seem to have a pretty good understanding of who is the polling firm on this?
Braun Research. For Fox News.
Do we know the size of their sample? Do you have those figures? I mean, you're concerned about the weighting of the poll, but, I mean, are they looking at, 1,100, 1,200 people? Are they looking at a much smaller sample? If you don't have it, that's fine.
I don't have it right.
Okay.
Well, I can actually pull it up, but the issue is not how big the numbers were. It could be a million people if you've overweighted the number of Democrats
clearly.
As part of the, or over, if you overweight Republicans. And it's a problem that pollsters do make. That you can overweight African Americans, you can overweight white voters, you can overweight Republicans.
And sometimes it's a matter of kind of guessing at enthusiasm, correct?
Yeah, because there's also an estimate of, it's sort of subjective how many people say they're Democrat versus Republican. Realistically, when we're doing polling, we find women answer the phone a lot more often than men. Older voters answer the phone just drastically more often than younger voters. And so there is a subjective guess as to what your partisanship is. And that's why we never virtually, unless it's just become required for a particular purpose, we don't wait at Landmark Communications by party, because that can be a moving number. Whereas something empirical like race or age, things we can check against a database, those are going to be fairly immobile.
It's interesting. Okay, Mark, you've told us something that I don't think is – I haven't heard it reported anywhere. And a lot of news organizations, in addition to the president himself, are calling attention to the Fox numbers. Although Fox – it would be a mistake to think that Fox polling over, say, the last year has been highly favorable or beneficial in some way to the president.
And haven't we seen the same general movement on several polls?
Yeah, that was the next
There was an NPR
yes.
poll and a CBS
small jumps,
poll.
But the one that caught the eye, and that's why we're talking about it, was the Fox poll because it was so dramatic. And people, of course, have a visceral reaction to Fox a lot of times. It's either you love them or you hate them.
But their polling is pretty much
But their polling is down the line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their polling is very much down the line and is considered a rather accurate polling company, actually.
The NPR poll that you talked about, Jim, shows that 52%, and I don't have the dates of this, but I'm assuming it's in early October, 52% say they approve of the inquiry, 43% disapprove. It's a slight increase from 2 weeks ago when 49% approved, 46% disapproved. But here, the NPR release on this, Mark, says that the uptick in support for the impeachment investigation does come from swing voters, from a swing among independent voters who are moving a little bit more into the column of supporting the investigation, if not the outright impeachment.
And that's you're referring to the Fox poll there?
That's the NPR poll.
Stepping back just for one moment, you asked me to just confirm how many people were in the Fox poll and were on research poll, and that was 1,003.
So that's about a 3%.
And they were registered voters, not active voters, which is a big difference as well. It's going to be more democratic when you go to registered voters as opposed to active.
Active voters and likely voters are somewhat similar.
They didn't even connect to likely voters. This was just straight.
Registered voters are, I mean, it's, you know, you're drawing from a list. You're not looking at their history.
Right.
You don't know, you know, whether they show up every other election or every third election. And that's, you know, polling companies will do that. When you're this far out on an election, I presume because one of it is an expense, because it's harder to track down the likely voters, the active voters.
Everyone is going to tell you they're a likely voter at this stage. In fact, that's the dirty secret in polling, not to get into the weeds here, but many people tell you they're going to vote even if they're not going to vote.
Aren't there screening questions to handle that?
That's what we do, is screening questions, but people think they voted a month after an election, even if they didn't.
Gotcha.
They literally forget who they voted for. There's some remarkable research on this. Whoever wins the election gets an uptick in the number of people after the election saying they voted for them.
Interesting.
People want to side with the winner after the election.
Yeah.
And as to the poll that you're mentioning there, I have not read the NPR.
Well, here's what. Okay, so NPR shows a smaller jump. They show the jump among independent voters, but it's a small one. But it's interesting, you say that the Fox numbers are suspect, and the NPR poll may give you some evidence of that, because on whether Trump should be impeached and removed from office, both, they're 48-48.
Quinnipiac found that just a couple of weeks ago, it was 47-47, and the numbers are now down as of a week ago, that the numbers, they took an initial spike because you had Pelosi going on prime time and basically declared that the administration is corrupt, and now people are starting to look at the evidence, and it's not exactly strong. And the support for impeachment is going down.
So, Jim, that's an interesting question. Mark just said something interesting. We are seeing the numbers in a general way, slowly, incrementally, and in a few minutes, I want to talk about what happened with President Nixon, but moving toward at least the American people saying an investigation is warranted, if not outright conviction and removal from office. But the Democrats are going to have to make the case, not just on what they consider to be the evidence, but on their conduct in moving forward, aren't they?
They are. But I mean, I think, and I think this will fit in with what Mark is saying about upswings and downswings on the attitude. I mean, voter attitudes are going to change with the amount of actual, real information that comes to light. I mean, the first news of a whistleblower report, that struck some people. Then you had the White House releasing a memo of that phone call, which kind of tracked with that. So that's new information, easy to understand, and coming from, you know, a fairly unimpeachable source here. Now what we've got going right now, the House and the Senate are not in session, but the House has continued to have hearings. But as we've said on this program before, because they've chosen to go through the House Intelligence Committee on this, these hearings are all closed. So, yeah, you get the prepared statement, initial statement from, say, a Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine, but you don't know the details yet.
Yeah.
Until we get that information, I think, you know, people are sitting back and waiting.
You know, the other thing, you were referencing the Nixon situation. The two are very different. I think people understood what happened with the Nixon situation. It was a break-in. It was a cover-up. I bet you not 10% of Americans could name the president of Ukraine, the prime minister. I think they don't know what happened. This is just a visceral reaction that almost parallels the favorable and unfavorable to Trump. The Democrats have been screaming impeachment for 2 years. This is not new. They've just grabbed onto some new issue. And I don't think they've grabbed onto an issue that anybody really understands. They may understand that they think Biden did something and he asked for some foreign help in investigating Biden, but I don't think they really understand what the charges are.
And this is why you even though a lot of people say you don't need it, this is why Democrats are really pressing hard to the Department of Defense, to OMB for details of how that $391 million in military aid to Ukraine was held up, if indeed it was held up. That's why they're looking for that info. And that's why I think that's, you know, if they don't find that, Mark, I think you're right. You know, it's going to be hard to, I think, yes, the quid pro quo may not be legally required, but I think to get a political consensus on it, I think people are going to have to see something like that.
How many Democrats will be able to vote no based on evidence is another question. They have walked so far down the plank of the ship. How are they going to ever vote no now that they're here if they voted for impeachment? I don't think they can.
Well,
they have to move forward no matter what the evidence is, practically speaking.
So this is where not having our Democrat at the table with us today makes a difference. I think that if we did have our Democratic panelist here today, she would have said to you, Mark, no. People understand that President Trump asked a foreign leader to help get dirt on the opponent that he fears most in the 2020 election race, and that's fairly simple to understand. I also I do think, and I want you to respond to all
yeah,
of this.
Sure.
I do wonder if the Democrats overplay their hand by talking about a quid pro quo. That's tough for them to really prove unless they get some very compelling documents or whatever from the subpoenas they're sending out, the search net they've sent out there. Because I think the Democrat, had she been at the table, they would have said, you don't need a quid pro quo. What you've got is a president in notes from a phone call asking for help from a foreign leader to get dirt on an opponent. Your response?
I'm sure you're correct in the sense that that's what the Democratic perspective is, because that's the Democratic argument. I think if we were to poll it, most people could not tell you what this was about. I don't think they even understand the basics of it, other than they either like Trump or they don't.
Interesting.
It's different.
Well,
there is another
question. Jim, if President Trump's, you know, I just said a minute ago that I think in addition to getting evidence, Democrats are going to have to comport themselves in such a way that the American people grow to really trust where they're headed with this thing. I don't think, say, for instance, we talked about this on the show the other day, Adam Schiff did himself any favors
right.
when he did a parody of a gangster behaving as President Trump in the phone call with President Zelensky of Ukraine. But similarly, the president's response and hit the anger, the vitriol, the obscenities that seem to be coming out of him now, I just wonder if the American people aren't going to be judging that as well, and the refusal to participate in any way in the inquiry.
Yeah, and look, this is, and I think a lot of us we would point to the only thing other than the Watergate impeachment in our experience, which is Bill Clinton. In that was what, 94 or 98.
Yeah.
Okay, and of course the rap there on Republicans is that they were alleged to have lost the middle there. And that's where, Mark, I think you're right. I think it's going to be hard for any House Democrat to vote no on the impeachment question because they've walked down the road so far. I'm not sure that there's going to be they're going to pay any penalty for that, just given how polarized we are already.
I agree with you. That's the other flip of the coin is they almost can't pull back. But does it, from a and all we're talking about today is politics, not policy per se. Wow, that was a lot of peas in a row. But in reality, does it even hurt Democrats when most of them are elected from Democratic-leaning districts? Probably not.
Right. And look, I think, you know, I think even Lucy McBath may get a walk on this.
She's going to be interesting to see in the long run, though. She may get a pass, as you put it, but she has been much more tentative about this issue.
Right.
But it comes off as tentative, not thoughtful. She's more concerned about the politics of it, I think, is how it's being perceived, as opposed to if she's really contemplating whether she'll vote yes or no. I don't think anybody questioned that she was going to vote yes.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, now that we've got a pollster in front of us, okay,
yeah.
All right, and this is kind of on the same topic, but maybe a little bit different. To your point, Bill, I did watch the Trump rally last week, not in Louisiana, but in Minnesota.
Minnesota, he was up,
in Minnesota, yep. You know, and the language was appalling. I mean, there were things that had he said them in the South would have registered far more differently. Than they did there last week, and Mark, at what point does I guess I would call it Trump fatigue come into polling? Because I mean, to the question of whether we have gone through 3 years of high drama as far as the White House is concerned, at what point do voters say, okay, all right, I'll give, Trump's done plenty of stuff I like, but I don't think I can handle 4 more years of this.
Well, it always depends on who someone is running against. It's easy to look and see, are people concerned about, are they fed up, do they have fatigue is the term. That's one question. Until you pair them with Elizabeth Warren, that is going to be a different scenario, because then the question is, do you put up with the fatigue? Because there are people that are probably his voters that are tired of reading about somebody getting fired from the White House, having a cheap shot thrown at them as they close the door on the way out, and then, the new hiring of somebody. I mean, these sorts of stories, there is a fatigue to that. I agree with you. The other question is, but compared to what? And that's what pollsters often, in my findings, miss, is that they make these, grand, excited points that somebody is in a lot of trouble, and then the opponent gets into the play, and suddenly you're going to have to deal with versus Elizabeth Warren or Biden.
Or Biden.
So here's another interesting. We should get to a break, but before we do, let me have just take a minute on this. It may or may not be Ukraine, but the president's quick decision in a phone call to pull American troops out of northern Syria—that's getting criticized by the very people you said, if he said those things in the South, he might be really in trouble by making obscene comments in a rally in Minnesota. Well, evangelical leaders have been speaking out rather strongly against President Trump, turning his back on the Kurds. You've got Franklin Graham has criticized him,
right, and putting Syrian Christians at risk,
exactly. And that that's a complicated, that's even more complicated than Ukraine, Mark.
But now you're going to Pickens County complicated.
But it's pretty visceral. It's pretty visceral to the criticism of, you have abandoned people who deserve our support for all they've done for us.
There are going to be issues that are about policy, and they carry strong repercussions for policy. Is President Trump going to win or lose based on whether or not he's perceived to have abandoned the Kurds when single digits of Americans can name the group? I happen to disagree with what the president did, but that is neither here nor there. But I don't think that most people can even name the people that are involved in that situation.
Before we break, I want to go through just quick some numbers on Nixon.
Right.
President Nixon was reelected in 1972. When he took office in 1973, in January of 73, Gallup had him at 68% approval. By April, when the cover-up started, when the break-in started gaining news, when the House began looking at what had happened there, his approval rating started dropping. By April, just a few months later, it was down to 48% in 1973. But it was really, Mark, as you probably know, more than a year before the bottom really fell out on his numbers. Even though the public thought that Watergate was a serious matter, his approval ratings still held strong until the existence of the tapes came to light in 1974. These things take a long time to unfold, is the point there.
Well, they do. And you know, I don't think you can connect, nor do I think you're even doing that, but to connect the Trump situation too much with the Nixon situation.
Why not? I mean, isn't it a matter of a story that the American people are being told and they'll weigh in one way or the other on it as they understand it?
You're asking me, you know, to make a projection on whether this eventually goes away or not. I mean, of course, if there's tapes and you have, you know, Trump rubbing his hands and saying, you know, some sort of corrupt thing, then of course that's an issue. But assuming for just a minute that he didn't do that, just assuming for a minute that he didn't do that, regardless of your position on it, this is a very complicated issue the Democrats have chosen to pick out. And this is not as simple as, you know, a kind of a buffoonery version of Cops and Robbers where people, political operatives, break into a hotel, leave fingerprints and the rest. This is not that. This is, and it's also, you know, there are going to be a lot of arguments that are, that this is a foreign policy issue. There's going to be security brought into it. I think this is a much more complicated issue than some guy breaking in a hotel.
Foreign policy is a hard issue for voters to decide on.
We got to get to a break. Tom Faust is looking at me like, take the break. Here it comes, Tom.
I'm Sarah Ahman. I own Out of the Blue in Blue Ridge, Georgia. We specialize in wines from around the world and high-end cheeses. And we also have craft beer. I think a lot of people that listen to GPB, it's just part of their day-to-day routine. I have people coming up from Atlanta just to see what Out of the Blue is all about because they hear our ads all the time, and they say so.
To find out more about becoming a corporate sponsor, email sponsorship@gpb.org.
On the next Fresh Air. Elton John returns to talk to Terry about his new memoir. It's pretty forthcoming about family, addiction, and sexuality. And so is their conversation. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and GPBnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Okay, so I'm going to pull this up here. Oh, we have not talked about this in advance, Mark Rountree or Jim Galloway, but that's fine.
Ready.
You can step in on anything. Last night, our Virginia Prescott of On Second Thought did an interview with Rachel Maddow at the Fox Theater. They recorded the conversation, and at some point, they'll announce when they're going to be able to produce it and put it on, I think, their show, On Second Thought. But I thought, Tom Faust, why don't we listen to the second soundbite? Among the many things that Rachel Maddow talked about, and of course we know that Rachel Maddow has a liberal talk show, which is a good thing today since we don't have a Democratic guest here. And she talked about the president and his war on the media.
I know that every president hates the press and every president complains about the press. What's going on now with this president is different. Actually, the only other politician I've ever seen try to undermine journalism writ large the way our president is now, the only other politician I've ever seen try it is Spiro Agnew. It failed for Agnew. We don't yet know if it's going to fail for this president. The effort to try to turn us into part of the fight where some of us are enemies and some of us are allies shouldn't work because journalism is neutral in terms of its political impact other than the fact that we need it for our democracy.
Rachel Maddow talking to Virginia Prescott last night at the Fox Theater. So, Jim Galloway, this comes at the same time that we've had this terrible news story about a video which shows President Trump, a dummied-up video, obviously, massacring a number of journalists who are in the church of fake news. Now, the White House has already condemned this video. Nevertheless, it's a tone.
It was shown on a Trump at a Trump property at a meeting of a Trump-allied pack at a Trump property.
Yes.
The organizers of the pack are now saying that it was kind of a unsolicited, unscheduled kind of appearance, and they do not condone it. The White House very quickly understood that it was over the line. I think it was the King's. It was a scene from the second Kingsman
yes,
Kingsman
exactly.
movie, which was actually the massacre at a church in Kentucky, I think. And it was rather cartoonish. And this is, and Trump's head was superimposed on the prime shooter. And then the various media identities were kind of thrown here and there. But it was
Bernie Sanders gets shot in the head, blood erupts from him.
Yeah, it was. Clearly the White House understood immediately that was a line not to be crossed.
You know, Mark, I guess you could say it's a good thing that Stephanie Grisham, the White House press secretary, immediately responded and said in a tweet, "The president hasn't seen it yet. He'll look at it soon, but we condemn it." On the other hand, how do you deal with the fact that this is a tone the president has set for hating the media?
We had nothing to do with that.
No, but.
Well, don't connect him to it then.
I'm asking whether if you call the media the enemy of the people, which the president has done repeatedly, call them despicable, call them fake news, whether this is one of the consequences that you can expect when that's the tone that's been set.
Well, I think they're saying that you should not expect that, which is why they condemned it. That is not acceptable.
And what would you tell, how do you deal with when you're out there representing a candidate, when critical stories get printed about your candidate? Is it automatically fake news if there's some criticism of a candidate expressed?
No. Gosh, no. You deal with it every day. On my end of things, we run campaigns for a living, and some stories are true and some aren't. But you...
some stories are true or some aren't, but are some stories accurate, despite the fact they're critical of the candidate you're representing?
Well, of course they're accurate. But, okay. But then there's also context.
Yeah.
I don't think in the context of anything that Trump has ever called for a single act of violence against anyone. And he may view, rightly or wrongly, he may view media as his enemy. And therefore, he takes on the sort of this odd verbiage of the people, because it's not an enemy of the people.
Yet.
But it is kind of funny when Rachel Maddow, of all people, becomes the purveyor of, you know, the guardianship of what's decent and neutral
well,
media. Her term was neutral.
I was just going to say that. I was actually going to say that, Jim, and we're almost out of time, and I wish we had a couple more minutes, but you get about 30 seconds. People would challenge, as Mark just did, her description of the media as neutral. Certainly MSNBC is not neutral, as Fox News is not neutral. There are people who think the Washington Post and the New York Times aren't neutral.
But there are people within those two organizations who I think probably are neutral.
Yes.
Right.
And the other part of this discussion that we can't have right now is the departure of Shepard Smith from Fox News.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, you've got Chris Wallace left holding down
And several others in there.
Yeah. All right. We are completely out of time for today's show. I'm sorry we're not going to be able to talk more about that, because it's a really interesting topic. But Mark Roundtree, Jim Galloway, thank you for being here today. Hey, tomorrow we're going to do a show on the history of partisanship in American politics to coincide with the impeachment inquiry going on. And Jim Galloway just told me Quinnipiac is going to announce a new national poll at 3 o'clock today. It's any minute now. See you tomorrow at 2:00.